Yeah, I'm here in Belturbet and I'm talking to Sheila Gorbley.
Yeah.
And Sheila, your maiden name was Mulligan.
Yes.
And where, tell me, where were you brought up?
I was born and reared in Killeshandra, in the address you have here.
Which is
Drumroof, Killeshandra.
And what was it like growing up there?
It was born and reared on a farm. Not well off, not really had enough to do, was always had enough to eat, but poor, you know, you wouldn't have anything extra or bag of sweets maybe once a week, or there was 9 children of us in the family, 7 girls and 2 boys, and it wasn't, it was like we minded our own business out in the country. We went to school, but that would be nearly the only outing you'd get. It was, we wouldn't be mixing in the community much. You got your clothes off when you came home from Mass and you went out to play in the fields. And that was the way we were brought up, really. We played with one another, you know.
I see, yeah.
So it was in a small house. We were brought up in a small house and plenty of place outside, but we hadn't that much space inside. And as I kind of think about it now, it would have been there. Even though my mother and father were great people and they were full of love, it was very fear-based. Like,
was it?
You know, it was, you had to be doing the right thing, or, and we were all very clamped into kind of, you know, there would have been 4 of us now in a bed of girls, and there would be no space for your own independence or your own, like, being brought up to be you as such, if you know what I mean. It was like,
I know,
do what you're told, kind of. It would be fear-based, is the way to put it.
I know. So
and then I suppose what didn't help my fear was I was sick as a child. I had a bowel complaint and I couldn't go any place because I used to get diarrhea and bleeding, and I was always kind of having to stay at home, or that went on for 4 years before they found out what it was, and I was sent to Crumlin, and I remember the fear of that was shocking. I was in Crumlin for 4 months, and eventually they found out, and thank God it was cured with medication, but I suppose that didn't help with the fear of my upbringing, you know.
And so it was strict, it was hard, and it was crowded with all your siblings.
Yes.
And so no prospects of a future, if I could say, because except for emigration, I suppose, for lots.
Well,
or
it was go out to work. From the time we were 14 or 16, everybody had to go to work. I would have been fourth in the family, and Maureen, Kathleen, Liam, they went to work before me. So Maureen would have went to work, the eldest, in a local shop. Kathleen, the next girl, would have got school. She would have got into secondary school, and then she would have got office work, or better work, that time we call it. But then when it came to me, I had been kind of sick and missed loads and loads of school, so my mother got me a job in a drapery shop in Cavan. Oh. So it was kind of go in, and the test was add up so many sums on a page, you know, to get the job. But it was because my mother was a customer that you got the job, you know what I mean?
That helped.
And that would have been it, I'd say. So served my time for 4 years there, and by God, that was hard. Like, I had to walk most mornings for 2 miles before I got a lift into Cavan. Like, I was walking in the other direction to get a lift with this chap that was a mechanic that was working in Cavan. And then sometimes I could walk that 2 miles and he might say after an hour, I'm not going. And I'd have to walk back to get on the main road to get another lift. And the cold and the frost, I always remember that, cutting through you. Like, I'd be gone from 6:30 to try and get into work for 9:30.
My God. And were you, at that time, that would have been, if you were born in 1947, so we were talking about the early 60s.
63. Yeah. I started working in 63.
And at that stage, you know, you were still living at home, were you? Or were you living
in? Yes, I was still living at home.
And Drumrisk, is it close to the border there?
No, it's... It'd be a bit further. It's 11, 12 miles from here now.
Yeah.
So...
this is from Ballyturbet. So
from Ballyturbet. So Ballyconnell is probably closer, and then we'd be going more kind of inland a bit towards Cavan to the left. So it's...
But it's very rural.
Oh, very rural. Yeah. But now, the night the bomb went off, it was heard clearly in... at home in Drumrisk. They got an awful fright. They were all heard the bomb very clearly. And I was here and they were trying to get a phone call to see, you know, who was dead or...
So this is the bomb that went off here in Ballyturbet.
Yeah.
In 1972.
Yes.
And you were working here at the time.
No, I was married at that time. I got married in 1970.
Okay. And so
and
you
I was
married,
living
you,
here.
You left your job in Cavan, did you?
No. Before I got married, I had gone to Dublin to work for 2 years. And then I came back to get married. And then I started work for somebody else as soon as I got married. So I was working in Cavan Town and living here to a local man that I married here.
And what was his name?
Pierce Garvey.
And is he still alive?
Oh, yeah, he's here and alive and kicking. And he could probably tell you more maybe about... this. We separated in 1990, but he could tell you as much and maybe more than me, you know.
Yeah.
He lives in Ballyconnell now.
But we're here in the middle of Ballyturbet.
Yeah.
And I'm looking across at the memorial, and you say your house is 2 doors up from here, from the hotel.
Yeah, we were living in a flat there at that time.
It's directly across the road from where the bomb went off.
Directly across the road.
Beside the post office.
Yeah, beside the post office, yeah.
So what did you experience that morning?
It was night time
it went off?
Yeah, I was after being at home for Christmas. I think it was 2 days after Christmas or maybe 3 days after Christmas. Was it the 27th of December? I forget. I think it was around that time. And I had come back to Ballyturbet and... I remember sitting down and I was lonely from my brothers were home from Wales. They had gone to Wales, of course, emigration again because there was no work at home. And they were home on holidays for Christmas and we'd gone back. And I remember sitting crying over them. And I sat down to watch Tom Jones. This is so clear in my mind on the television. He was on for an hour and only for Tom Jones that night. I'd say I could have been killed because... I kept watching and I was going to get up to do something every minute and didn't get up off the couch. I was lying on the couch, which my head would have been facing that way towards the street. And I didn't get up. And when the bomb went off, the door on the right hand side fell on top of me, on top of the couch. And that saved me from the flying metal. It saved me from the blast. So otherwise I could have been killed stone dead, you know.
Well, yes, because you were so close to the bomb.
Yeah, yeah.
And that moment when it went off, the noise, did it deafen you?
The shock would have been that I didn't have a clue what had happened, you know. I remember pushing the door off me and going to the window, which was a very silly thing to do, and everything was on flames.
Yeah.
And I could see the car on flames and I could see everything in the street nearly on flames. And then I heard the cries of the screaming children and there were 3 children in a flat above me. And they were, belonged to the man that owned the supermarket downstairs that we had our flat rented from. And he was out for the night and he had left his 3 children with a babysitter. And we didn't know they were there, or we didn't know what to do, but Piers, my husband, was working at the time as an engineer, toolmaker, and they were down in Barrack Hill, which is down this end of the town, at work, him and his friends.
Yeah.
And they were always working late at night. I think it must have been 11 or 12 o'clock when it went off. No, it wouldn't have been 12. It probably might have been around 11. And him and his friends came running up the street, of course, to see, was I all right? You know, they would have been the first that I saw, and he shouted up at me. And then the screams of the children, and when they went to save the children, there was no stairs. The stairs had been blown out of it.
Yeah.
So the little fella that was with him, I think Ruin was his name, he climbed up. How he got up, I don't know. And he threw down the children one by one into Pierce's arms. And we got them into a corner and huddled them for till we thought it was safe to go out. And when we got blankets or coats or something round us and got out the door and got down to Mammy Gorby's house, which is his mother lived on Halburn Hill there, just up the road there.
Yeah.
So we got the kids up there, and of course the mother and father, they were in Ballyconnell out on the same night, and they were going frantic and couldn't get through on a phone, you know, nobody could get through on the phone. So eventually somebody got a message to them that they were all right, that the children were all right. We had taken them to Pierce's mother's, and we sat there waiting, and they came back and got their children. Oh, it was all panic, it was all like, but the fear. I remember thinking, where will I run, you know, will I try to run that way up the bank by the bank to get to Cavan, or will I try to run back to Killeshandra? But I couldn't run anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I had no car then to try and get out. So we were all in Pierce's mother's house that night, which was where we had to stay for months because we had no place to go. And that was horrendous afterwards, the months after that. Every night you're waiting for a bomb to go off. And we put blankets on the windows at night going to bed. We were nailing up blankets to the windows. And
because, yes, I want to ask you now, you would have been watching television, watching all the other towns that were hit and bombs going off underneath cars and people being shot. So did you feel safe in here in this village, you know, when you came home in the evening? Did you feel felt safe here?
I did. It never kind of dawned on me. The only time I wouldn't have felt safe crossing the border, but we always felt that once this side of the border you were safe. You know, we never felt, but we would have been, Wattle Bridge was blown up down there, I think it was Wattle Bridge, and we would have always felt we couldn't go there, you know what I mean? I wouldn't go there, even until this day, at night time now, I wouldn't drive in the north of Ireland, I'd still be scared.
Would you?
Oh yeah, I'd still have that.
Yeah.
Eerie feeling about it, you know.
Now, did you have any other experience after that, or even before that, that maybe you were going to Enniskillen for a day, or were you ever?
No, I never
stopped?
Really went. I never really went up and down the north. No. Now, I'd say, if I can think back for you, and I might do before the end of the day, of people that were stopped and harassed and, you know, had very bad experiences of going up and down to the north. But I didn't. I wasn't one of those because I didn't kind of.
Yeah. Well, working down here in Cavan and feeling safe, as you say, did you see the north then as another country, another place?
I would have, yeah. I would have. It'd be a place I wouldn't go.
Really? And even the people, I'm sure you had friends from Fermanagh and down places.
Not really, no. I wouldn't have had now, not in my experience. I wouldn't have had. And I remember an aunt of mine used to come home from from England regularly, Mammy's sister, to visit. And after that trouble in the 70s, she wouldn't come for years. Oh, no, 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 no. She, over there, she lived in Coventry, and over there, they felt it was all the same, you know.
Did they?
Yeah, she wouldn't come home because she thought, because the trouble was all the same everywhere, you know.
Was there any of your family involved with the IRA or with any subversive
No.
organization at all?
No, but I remember my father, I suppose, would have been a real believer, a real old IRA believer. And I remember listening to him. He was born in 1916. And I remember listening to stories from him, you know. But unfortunately now, I wish I had to listen to more, you know. But I remember him telling us about the black and tans turning them upside down, in their turning the beds upside down. And that was around Kilchandra. Mm. That would have been his mother and his relations and at that time.
How do you mean turning them upside down?
They came in and turned the beds upside down, threw them out of their beds, searching the houses, you know.
That's way back.
Now, that would have been Daddy talking about that, but he remembers that. He would have been a child at that time.
Yeah.
He was born in 1916, as I said, but that happened around Kilchandra, you know.
Yeah, and but would you call your house a republic house, a house full of nationalism and strong tradition in
yeah,
the family?
Yeah, I would. Although it was kind of, I suppose, to be afraid to say it out loud. Hmm. I'd said they wouldn't talk about it outside the door of the house, but I knew in my father's heart he was a real Republican, you know. But it's not something that you go around. That fear was in them from he was a child of what would have been taught that. You know?
And when the troubles broke out that time in 1969, did your father think about going up to the north? And
oh, no.
He wouldn't
get involved, or he wouldn't. Like, he'd read about it and talk about it, but he wouldn't. He would never get involved in it, no. Stay well away, stay well out of it, you know.
Okay. Was the border used as a kind of a, being in the farming business, was it used as a kind of a smuggling? Or
I remember getting the butter. I remember an odd time, whoever it was, maybe neighbours or somebody, getting cheap butter when we couldn't, when butter was very dear. But I kind of vaguely remember that. But we were small farmers, but Daddy would have made, I remember as a child, churning butter and making our own butter, you know, all that kind of stuff. We grew our own vegetables. We ate off the farm all the time, you know. Mammy would have went to the butcher's once a week and that was it. We would have had our own bacon and our own everything, you know.
And would your father, would he have been, say, a jobber for other farmers in smuggling cattle through the border?
No. No.
None of that went on?
None of that went on at all, no. It was kind of mind your own business house. You know what I mean? Like, he wouldn't have got involved in it. He would have been, like, do his own thing and mind his own business and look after his own family, you know, that kind of, but I had no experience of any of that. I say, maybe before the end of the day, I'd think of somebody and some people that would have been involved in it.
But to come back to here again and the bomb, was that a whole change in your life then? I mean, did you become a different
desperate
person?
When I think of it now, I was in such fear for years. It had an awful effect on me, a dreadful effect on me. Like, you were always watching and waiting for something to happen. Like, even though afterwards we went on and built our own house in Belturbet, still up there on the main street, it still had an effect. You know, that it was a buried fear, I suppose, that you were afraid that this was going to happen all the time. But at that time we got no help. there was no such thing as a counsellor. Like, we were all going round afraid of our lives, and there was so many injured people. Like, there was some very badly injured people. But I would have been mentally, like, injured. I would have had no help. No doctor came into the house. Nobody said, you know, there'll be someone to talk to you or help you through it like today. Like, there was none of that at all.
Because that was post-traumatic stress.
That's
and
exactly.
A lot of people would have suffered that.
Yes. Yeah.
And there was no centre where people could get
treatment. No.
Did the community come together, all of you, here in the town? I mean, did you feel a sense of, you know, when something like that generally happens, the local people come together as a community. Did that happen here?
Yeah. They would have been very strong together. They would have been. But this is that kind of a town. This town is like, it's like one big family. And that's why I always loved it. And a lot of people come to it, stay in it, because it's very community. It's very like that, you know. They all kind of look out for each other. Everybody knows everybody. Is Kilchandra's totally different town altogether. The more, you know, mind your own business, as I said to you a minute ago. But Belturbet's not like that. Belturbet is very friendly and very, everybody's
and
kind of
shop supporting each other and all that kind of thing.
But
if you look out there today, there are not that too many people living in there.
No, it went down. It went down. This used to be a great town. In the last few years now, in the last 10 years, it would have went down something shocking. There was far more shops up that side of the street, and then there was people that would have walked up and down to the shops every day, you know, and you'd always meet people and talk to people on the street. That went in the last 10 years. It's a very changed town, very, very quiet town now in comparison to what it used to be.
Why was it so busy and so full of life in those days?
I don't know. I suppose there was a lot of more younger people, and my age, I was 22, 24 that time. There was an awful lot of people around my age, and there would have been young married couples, and there was a bit of work, I suppose.
Where was the work?
There was Irish Youth Supplies was out the road. That was an English factory, and an awful lot of the young fellas and some young girls. They made lasts for shoes. There's a little shopping centre out there now on the Cavan Road, but that's where the factory was, and there was a good bit of employment there now. And a lot of young people would have worked there, and be coming in from work in the evenings, be going out on. I remember a Friday night now here in this town, the pubs would be packed.
Yeah.
And you'd go out to socialise at 9 o'clock, and we'd all meet in a group, you know, and everybody be up in the horseshoes first, or in someplace else after, or, you know, it was always great socialising in town.
Was it?
Oh, yeah, big time, big time. Party, party, party. Have a good time, you know.
And so the dance hall would always be packed.
The Air and Pally, yeah. It was, that was every weekend, jam-packed. Even from I was started to dance at 16, myself and my brother used to drive down here to the dances every weekend, and then Tom Corrigan had the chip shop across the road. He owned the dance hall as well. And you had the dance and then over to the chipper, and that'd be packed every weekend.
Oh, right. That was, even at that stage, I'm sure that they were, you know, it was basically Catholic, was it, rather than Protestant, or was it a mixture?
It would have been a mixture.
Would it? No?
Yeah, it would have been a mixture.
And in those days, did you sense
any? I suppose it'd be mostly Catholic. We used to get, there'd be a crowd from Clonus. Not so much for Fermanagh crowd, but we didn't in those days. No, there was no fear, or there was no sense. And as I said, it was like nearly like two different countries. You know, you had your dance here, and that's as far as you went. We didn't go any further. Well, we used to go to Clonus in that time, but not across the border.
Was that border seen as, in your mind, so as a kind of a, what would you call it, a hard border, difficult, that, you know, that even to go is, yeah, is a problem, you know? That,
yeah. But at that time, it was, you had checkpoints and everything.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't bother, you know, you wouldn't. If there was no need to go, you wouldn't bother go. But it was a fearful place.
Yeah.
I remember even driving down maybe to Lisnaski after, maybe it would be years after that bomb, but the checkpoints would be there, and you'd see the guns pointing out of the little cubby holes, you know, the English army, and that would frighten the life out of you.
Mm.
You know, you didn't want to go there. Just stay well away from it.
And that didn't help in any way, of course, to entice the northerners to come down to the south.
Oh, no, it didn't, no. No, it would have been like, I don't know how they feel about coming down here or how see, it's all about today, everybody's attitude is different in the world, I suppose. Like, people are kind of live and let live. That time, it wasn't. It was from olden time. You don't marry a Protestant. It was Protestant there and Catholics there. It was carried on into my time, you know.
And you didn't mix, and you didn't go to the...
Not really, no.
Anyway, near the Protestant church, or you didn't?
No.
Yeah.
No, you didn't go anywhere near their stuff or their Protestant halls or dances or anything like that, you know.
And you rented this apartment here beside me for...
I was renting a flat, yeah. And it was over the supermarket. And that was... Property belonged to Herbie Shaw, was the man's name. I probably was only about 12 months in it.
After all that explosion, I suppose.
This would have been before that. I don't know how long. I was very short time in it when this happened.
Mm. And it wasn't because of the bomb that you decided to leave this place?
Oh, well, of course, there was no way. You had to get out. Like, it was completely destroyed. The doors were blown off, the stairs were blown off. It was completely, absolutely ruined.
Oh, where did you go then?
Up to Pierce's mother, which was on Holborn Hill, and stayed there, like, for, I don't know, maybe a year, the best part of a year.
Yeah.
And that wasn't easy. That was a small house as well, you know. And as a married couple, we were living with his mother and father and maybe another sister in the house. And I'd say everybody in the town had to do the same thing. They were kind of had to go to wherever they could get accommodation or whoever could help them out, you know. But I don't know what happened to Harvey, the man that was living there, or where he went. He probably had to go to...
Mm-hmm. Someplace as well.
Someplace. Now, he was a Protestant. And, you see, we would have got on perfectly fine at that time. And he had the supermarket there, or at least I think he was, yeah. And... before that trouble, that time, Protestants and Catholics got on okay, you know. Because I remember even in Killeshandra, Daddy used to say to me about the decent Protestants, you know, the decent people they were. The butcher in town, when he bought his small farm land, when he first got married, the butcher in town gave him his first cow and said, I don't want any money, pay me when you get on your feet, you know. And he was a Protestant man. So he always had great respect for them, you know.
Yeah.
So they got on, like, well together, you know. There was an awful lot of people that got on well together, as well as the Protestant Catholics or the that were fighting or had something, I don't know. When you think about it, they say that it's drugs nowadays that has going around in the name of the IRA and causing trouble. But I wonder, even that time, was there people being paid for causing trouble, or was there bad kind of gangs of people? You know, it was most of the normal people, like my father and me and the people living in this town, would never have wanted to get involved in any of that. They would have had respect for their Protestant neighbours, you know.
Why do you think this place was targeted, and why was there a bomb set off
I
here?
I don't have any idea of that now. Why? Why did they do that? But the, was it Monaghan? Oh no, it was Monaghan, Belturbet and Dublin. I suppose maybe it was the nearest point. Or who did? I don't think they even found out who did it. I don't think it was ever. They ever brought anyone to justice for it. Was it near and handy for them? And
so asking why then, I'm sure that went around in your mind. Also the disappointment, I suppose, the way people would have felt, town is wrecked.
Yeah,
you know.
Heartbroken. Yeah. Like for such, it would have been such a happy community, you know. Everybody got on so well, and such a happy place to live. As I said, from the day I came into it, I was so happy in it, and people were so friendly. And I don't know, maybe they had this thing that they were going to put an end to that, or they wanted to destroy this, you know, community happiness that was going on. I don't know.
And did you want to get your own back? Or did you feel like, oh, I'm going to get these fellas?
No. I wanted to run.
Yeah.
I wanted to run away from it, you know, try and get away from it. I wouldn't have felt kind of get my own back, because I suppose that would have been a way kind of out of reach, knowing, you know. I was very young and I wouldn't have thought who did it or why they did it that much, you know. It was more like, oh, where will I run to, would have been my attitude.
And then you had your baby, a daughter.
That was years and years afterwards.
Was it?
I didn't have Ciara until 1985. So
the troubles were kind of fading.
So that was well gone, you know. Although afterwards, I remember waiting to get the money. The big thing was then getting paid for your car and getting your damages. And the total sum of money was £850. That was for the car and all my wedding presents that I had in the flat. So it was very little money. But I was working, still in the rag trade, for a woman that had a shop in Cavan. And
what shop did you work in?
In Anna Lee Boutique, it was that time. And I got the money for me car or whatever it was I lost. I lost all my wedding presents, as I say, and all that kind of stuff. And that was years afterwards, 1975. I opened my own shop in Cavan. I went into business, went to be a very successful shop.
What was that called?
Sheila's Boutique.
Oh, right. And what street was that on?
On Main Street. Yeah. And that went on to be very successful and did very well. And then we built a house here in Belturbet on the Main Street, just up there at the butcher's. And Pierce and his brother bought the plot of land. It was empty for years, and they bought it and built. I remember that time they built the house for £400. I think it was, or 4,500.
Yes, imagine.
Yeah. And, I built up my business and bought me cars and got on with life and went on to be happy, you know.
And did successful. The insurance come quickly to you? Or?
No, it would have taken a good few years. When did I say the bomb was again?
1972.
72. Yeah, it would have been 3 years. It would have been 1975 before I got it. It would have been over 2 years anyway.
72, yeah.
Yeah, it was 72.
Yeah. And that was the Irish government, of course, wasn't it?
It would have been. Yeah. Yeah, it would have been the Irish government, yes.
And you said nothing was done to help here when afterwards by any rural or at least by any local authorities,
local government, local power. No, absolutely nothing. There was no help for anything. There was no, like, I'd say everybody had to try and rebuild their own premises, and then
was there a priest or?
Was, but I don't remember talking to him.
Yeah.
I never remember him coming into the house.
Yeah.
I never remember a doctor or a priest or a... There would have been no social workers that time like there is now.
Yeah.
No, there was nothing like that at all. Yeah. It's only now, at this stage of my life, in the last 5 or 10 years, that I'm thinking, you know, that was terrible. We should have got some help from someplace.
Of course, yeah.
You know, like, the effect that had on your life and the fear that it put into you, you know?
Mm-hmm. It was life-changing in many ways.
It was, of course, yeah. It was. Yeah. It was really tough, and there was no such thing as help at all of any kind, you know?
So, now, just talk about now and today, then. I mean, you have... talks of a border and a hard border and a soft border. Mm. Will it make any difference to your life if the border is back to what it was like with strict?
I suppose it wouldn't make a lot of difference to me personally, but I know it would make an awful lot of difference now to my ex-husband. He goes up and down to work in Lisnaski or to help out his son-in-law or his nephew, and he'd be up and down there all the time. And you know, there's people from the town here that would be flying up and down to Lisnaski all the time, and that would, I think, it'd make a dreadful difference. I think it'd be an awful mistake to have this hard border they're talking about. And how or what way they can get around it is nonsense. And yet I was listening to the radio yesterday evening, and somebody said about United Ireland, I forget who was talking to, and she said no, it was out of the question. But it would be a very sensible thing to do in my eyes. It would be a United Ireland for Ireland, for business, for comfort, for, you know, all these things.
Could you see it happening?
I don't know. I don't know. That's really... There'll be a lot of people fighting for it not to happen, you know. I still think that bitterness is there.
Do you?
Somehow, yeah. It's
just scratched the surface.
Divide, yeah. It's only scratching the surface, yeah.
Sheila, it was lovely to talk to you. And thanks.
You're very welcome, Morris. So
we'll be talking again.
We'll chat again, yeah. When I get as much more information as I can for you, or as many more people as I can to talk to you.
So Sheila Gorby, thank you.
You're welcome, Morris.
Sheila Gorby, thank you very much, and look forward to talking to you again.
Okay, thanks. Morris, nice to speak to you too.